Hello and welcome to Mystical and Mysteries, the podcast. Join your host, Olivia Dibert, as she talks about true crime with a psychic medium twist. She will be spotlighting missing persons, cold cases, and paranormal investigations, and featuring interviews with experts in their field, psychic medium roundtables, and covering any and every topic under the metaphysical umbrella. Now, let's get into today's episode.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to Mystical and Mysteries. Today, we have a special guest. Her name is Allison Diker, and I met Allison through a mutual friend, Suzanne Timms. And those of you might recognize her name. Suzanne is someone I did a reading for who had a mom that was missing. And unfortunately, Allison finds herself in the same situation. And I think that that's how you and Suzanne met, right?
Definitely. Yes.
Yeah. So, then Suzanne said, hey, would you be open to giving Allison a reading? And she's kind of in this, she didn't want to give me too much, but because I'm always like, don't tell me.
Right.
So she was like, do you mind? She's kind of in the same situation I'm in with my mom. And I was like, don't tell me anymore. I don't want to know. So we did. So the three of us got on Facebook and we started just kind of chatting, and I gave you a bit of a reading. But before we go into the reading, tell me a little bit about yourself. How old were you when your mom disappeared or when she went missing?
I was five, but I was just, so this happened on January 7th and my birthday was January 12th or is. So I was just days before turning six.
Oh my goodness. Why don't you go ahead and tell me about the books that you wrote because of all this going on with you? What inspired you? I mean, sure. I know what inspired you, but what pulled you to start doing it?
Well, the interesting thing is Suzanne Reed, she wrote a book called Anonymous Tip, and it was about missing persons. And she had reached out and sent me a message through Facebook saying, hi, you know, I'm an author and I research crime and missing persons, and I'm considering featuring your mother in my book. Would you be willing to talk to me? So at the time this was 3 years ago now. And at the time I was like, who is this person? Like reaching out to me out of nowhere. Like I never talked about my mother. It's just so emotionally triggering that I didn't talk about it. I'm a teacher. So I was very private, didn't want people to know about my background.
Right.
And you know, unfortunately, when you're the family member of the victim, you fear people's judgment. Even though I had nothing to do with it, you know, I totally fear, not so much now, I feared what people would think and say because I'm a child of, you know, this situation. Right. So anyway, I reached back to her and I thought, well, I can chat about it.
Yeah.
So we then arranged to talk, and, you know, to make a long story short, we really hit it off. She ends up writing her book, publishing her book. And she said, you know what, Allison, I'm telling you, your story is so amazing. I might want to do a book just on your mother's story. And all of a sudden I felt this like gut, like this negative gut feeling, like, no, you can't. Like, and I didn't know why. I it didn't sit well with me when she said that. And then I kind of just sat with it for a little bit. And I thought, I need to write that.
Yeah.
Like the reason I felt, you know, a negative way about it was because
she
could write her book if she wanted, but I really felt like, you know what, I'm okay now. I don't need to be concerned about my father coming after me or, you know, all of those fears that I had as a child that still, because they're unresolved, you still feel them as an adult. They're just, you have to like ground yourself and remember that I'm okay now.
Right.
So I thought, I really need to write this story. So that turned into how I was motivated to write the story. Cause I thought, I want people to hear it started out, I wanted it to have purpose. And while my mother's a missing person, she was so much more than just a missing person. She was so much more than what happened to her. And, you know, most people, what I had discovered, didn't even know about it. People locally didn't even know that this happened. And I thought, how do you not know that this crazy thing happened?
Right.
So, you know, I start writing the story. I start writing the story about what had happened. And then I decided to backtrack a little bit because the uniqueness of my mother is that she's also deaf.
Yes.
So I thought, you know, what screams at me about my mother, even though I was five, I have very little memories of her, but all the stories that I was blessed to hear from people about her helped me kind of form a picture of her. And she was so resilient, like so strong and determined. And even though there was so much against her, you know, because she couldn't hear and she's trying to fit into a hearing world, her family was all hearing and they would not accept anything but her best. I don't care that you're deaf. You will this, that, and the other, you know?
Right.
And she grew up with that same resilience. So I thought that's the story.
Yes.
So yes, I'm going to tell what happened to her. Yes, I'm going to tell what happened to me because I didn't have her.
Right.
And, you know, along the way where I'm at now, but the theme throughout it all is resilience. I have this child who's deaf in, you know, the 1950s.
Yeah.
So I love that my grandmother was like, you know, at that time you sent kids away to like boarding schools or whatever, for someone else to care for them. Right. And my grandmother was like, no, this is my child.
Right.
And I loved that because it was a time when that was unheard of. You don't do that. You know, if there's something wrong with them like that, you send them away. And she was like, no. So I loved her resilience. I loved my mother's resilience in overcoming, you know, the things that were stacked against her and saying, no, I'm still going to dream like everybody else.
Right.
And then the book goes into like, than what happened to me and my brother, because as you said, you never hear that. You hear she's missing. These are the details. And she had two children, but you never hear what happened to those children. And so you have this, she's gone, and you have a husband who's a person of interest, and there are two children, but throughout the 42 years of this case, never will you find an article that explains what happened to those kids.
Right.
Ever.
I know.
And so that was kind of the theme of wanting to tell the whole story, you know, and my resilience that I got from her, you know, and where I'm at today.
I think that book is going to be so important. And it's think of all the other people that you could help with that book. And I talk about ambiguous loss a lot, and it is a book that was written by Pauline Boss, and it talks about how not having that type of closure. I don't think that people understand that there's it's different types of grief based on different types of incidences that happen. And sometimes even when you have a body and you don't know what happened, that's ambiguous loss. It's, you don't know in between. But when you don't have a body, the grieving process never really starts. I mean, it does. You know in your head that they're not coming back.
Right.
But there's that glimmer of hope of, you know, maybe.
But what? But
like that big question mark. Like, I'm not giving up, you know. And I don't think anybody should give up, but it's that healing. That healing never starts.
Sure.
That's why I think that your book is going to be so important. And if people take a peek at it, you know, they're not alone. There's so many things. Unfortunately, crime happens every day. Unfortunately, there's cases like this all the time. And I just think of all the families that you could be helping with that book, the kids, the family. I mean,
I also feel like healing is interrupted in a situation with a missing person because you're like, once you come to a place of, you know, I accept that she's gone and there's no way she's here. And then a tip comes in, or then someone has an idea and then you start back at zero. Yeah. It's like interrupted and you start back over again because, well, this is what I thought and this is what I believe, but what if this is true? Right. So then you start all over again. And I did that my whole life.
I didn't even think about that. Like, I didn't even think about that, but 100%. Wow. Mm-hmm. That's crazy. Oh my goodness.
Yeah. I also wrote a book with my son, which I'm super excited about. It's available on Amazon now. I'm currently working with a different publisher because Amazon can't do it in hardback. And I feel like it's a keepsake book. Like it's a book right. that you read and you're like, oh, I love that message, you know?
Right.
So I'm working with a different publisher, but it will be available on Amazon in both formats, but
and how,
it's
how
currently
old is your
available
son?
In paperback.
How old is your
he
son?
He is 12. 12.
Awesome.
And the neat thing is the kids know what happened. You know, okay. and they're living a wonderful life. Thank God. You know, I'm giving them everything I dreamed of having. They're my therapy, right. but they know that this awful thing happened to their mom and right. their grandmother that they'll never know. And, my son in particular, you know, when there were times where, I would need to go back to Pennsylvania 2 hours from here for things like a cadaver dog search. And my right. son really, like, you know, kids listen from around the corner. And
I
even
know,
though I'm trying to prevent them from hearing things, he's like, Mom, please, can I go with you? And I was like, oh, honey, no, no, no. But I didn't realize how much he was hearing, even though I didn't want him to,
yeah.
and had feelings about it. And so I really wanted to give him the opportunity. Like my other two are a little younger. I have two daughters as well.
Right.
And they didn't have the same feelings. You know, they knew what happened, but weren't as inquisitive. So I thought, you know what? I'm also an elementary teacher. I'm a special education right. teacher and I work with kindergarten. So I thought, I want to write a children's book and put it in kind of like a child format. So I said, Aiden, giving him purpose because he craved something. Like he wanted to help. He wanted to do things. And he literally was in tears one day when I told him he couldn't come with me to a cadaver dog search.
Right.
And together we sat down and we wrote Rudy the Resilient Rhinoceros. Aiden's middle name is Rudolph after my husband's father. So it's about a rhinoceros who is very sick out in the wild. And the family is being watched by scientists and just because they're being studied and the father gets sick. Well, here he you know, is taken away to get better, but they're animals and they don't understand what's going on. And he's so sad. And it's about honoring those feelings. So, you know, Rudy had to get in tune with his sadness and feel it. And then he had to decide, you know what? I still need to help my mom. I still have a life to live. You know, I still have purpose and I'm going to make my dad proud. So, you know, then he's helping his mom gather food and do different things to honor his father instead of through sadness, which he had to feel
right.
Through, you know, taking on his role in caretaking and living. And then he's brought back, the father is brought back,
right.
the dad rhino. And he realizes that, you know, he was just sick and being cared for, but the dad says, Rudy, you are so resilient. And I'm so proud of you for feeling your feelings. And then choosing to rewrite the story and be, you know, responsible and helpful and look at all you've done. And so that's pretty much the nutshell of his story.
I love that. I love that because yes. that's one thing I always say. And even for like victims' families is purpose. Having a purpose yes. and doing something physical is so healing. It's just a healing mm-hmm. process. And so I love that you're also saying it's okay not to dwell on that, but to do something right. to move forward physically. And that's something like when I talk to families of you know, missing people and do something in their honor, do something for them and
yes.
do something in their honor. It makes you feel so empowered and resilient. I mean, it does give you that
yeah.
purpose, and purpose is so important for every human being on this earth. You have to have purpose in life to feel good about the stuff that you're doing and going forward and, you know, that kind
right.
of stuff. So I love that. So on
I love
Amazon,
too that the book, I'm sorry. I love too that the book says that part of the process is feeling the feelings.
Yeah.
Like so much, you know, up until this point where we talk more about mental health, like you can't just say, suck it up. Like
yeah.
you have to
yeah.
spend time with that grief and feel it and let it break
yes.
your heart so that you can grow from that. So I love that the message too in the book is it's what you have to get back up.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Even from the pain and the ugly and the bad experiences, we can learn
mm-hmm.
and then we become the teachers for somebody else. Yes. I truly believe that. And so, I mean, it sounds horrible. I don't want anybody to have to go through what you went through as a child, but look at you now. You are the teacher, literally, and figuratively, but you're going to be the teacher of right. books and someone will pick these up and read it. And, you know, maybe there's a situation where, you know, when you were little, you didn't have a book like that, but could the, I was a foster parent and I, my son was adopted and so I did all that stuff, but I thought what a cool book that would have been to have for some of my adopted yes. kids or for my foster kids.
For sure.
And,
yes.
That is super powerful. I think that is really, really cool. So kudos to you. That's very cool.
Thank you.
So our purpose today
is. And then it gave my son purpose, you know, he was able to step in and have a role too.
Yeah. And I get that feeling of like, nope, I got to be part of it. Love that you gave him a purpose by helping mm-hmm. others, really. And I think that's really cool.
Yeah.
What a gift. But so I do want to talk about your mom's case. And again, I did a reading for you. And so if you don't mind, I'm going to go ahead and get into the reading.
Sure.
And then you can tell me then about what, you know what, I lied to you. I think I want you to tell me about what you know of your mom's case, what happened, and then I'll go into my readings. But I feel like let's start with your mom's story.
Sure. So the story began in, you know, a small little town in Pennsylvania called Little's Corners. She met my father, who was also deaf, in a like social club for the deaf. So it's a place where, you know, as a deaf person, you know, it's hard to kind of mingle with people who are hearing. Not that my mother made that a stumbling block, right. but she just felt more comfortable being able to talk with people who could fluently talk to her.
Right.
So she actually met my father at this deaf club and they hit it off right away. At this time in my mother's life, I think she felt very, very strongly about, you know, dreaming of being a wife and mother, and
right.
and he kind of fit the bill. You know, he was funny and he kind of swept her off her feet, so to speak. And there were some red flags. But of course, you know, when you're in love, you choose to ignore those things right. or reason those things away. My father had been convicted of many crimes, mostly robbery, break-ins, theft, things like that. But she kind of had this, I'm going to change him mentality, you know, I'm going to help him be a better person. And, you know, right. so basically it's like, you know, she was this goody two shoes, never in trouble, you know, strong, loving family. And then my father was in trouble a lot, but he was one of those children that was sent away to the school for the deaf. Now, for some people that could have been a wonderful experience. So I sure. by no means mean to say that that was an awful thing.
Right.
I do wonder as a mom myself, like, how you reconcile not being with your family, you know, right. at a young age and growing up. So, you know, in his defense, he grew up very differently than she did.
Yeah.
then, you know, they decide to get married. My grandmother, none of my mother's family really liked my father, and he was argumentative and very controlling of her. And they all saw red flags. Of course, she only saw her love.
Right.
My grandmother even went so far as to say, when my mother came home and said they were engaged, both of my grandparents offered to buy her a car to start a better life. And they said, well, we'll buy you a car, but only if you don't marry him. And, you know, she, of course, did not buy into that.
Right.
And they proceed to get married. Please don't marry him. And my great grandmother, my grandmother's mother, was like, knock it off, Maxine. You know, you can't stand in the way, like kind of chastising her.
Right.
And my mother went through with it. And my grandmother never felt right about it. Never liked him, never trusted him, never felt like, you know, there was a glimmer of hope that he would change.
Right.
And, you know, to fast forward, I was born. And again, you know, another one of those things that's supposed to change him. Now he's a father, so he'll be responsible and he'll right. stop his negative ways. And that didn't happen.
Right.
She is pregnant again. You know, they're constantly in turmoil, the relationship. She gives birth to my brother, who is about 2 years younger than me. Okay. And my father is actually in jail when my brother Aaron is born. And he was in jail because he had staged a robbery at a bar that he was working at. And he was like, you know, doing the cleaning and closing the bar down. Right. Well, he stole money from the register, and then he broke the glass from the inside out instead of the outside in. So that's kind of how they busted him. But the point of me telling this story is he like really went through stages and steps to set this all up. He even shot a hole through his cap and said that they shot at him, but conveniently it never actually touched his head. It just shot through his hat. Like, so these, like all these little details, ironically, are very similar in the case of my mother, that I can't do this anymore for the sake of my children. This is not good. I need a better life. I need, you know, they separated, and I'm going to come back to that. Those crime tidbits I just said, but, they separated in October of 1980. She told him to leave. This isn't working. I want better for my children. I want better for myself.
Yeah.
He agreed to leave, moved in with his parents. Now, this area of Pennsylvania is very, very, we call it the snow belt. And this year was no different. And so she knew, she wanted him to be able to experience the holidays with his children. So she knew that it would be hard to drive the road. So she told him over the holidays he could come back, but it was just for the holidays, so he could spend time with his children. And she didn't want to take that away from him.
Right.
Well, after that, he refused to leave. You know, the turmoil continued, the arguments continued, the fighting continued. Oh, she said, "You've got to leave," and he refused. She went to her father on January 6th. She worked, you know, her normal job, picked up the kids. And I'm not sure if she went to him before picking us up, it doesn't matter, but she went to my grandfather and asked to borrow money to leave my father, you know, and said, I've got to leave, because he's not going to.
Right, right.
My grandfather handed her $60 and said, "This is all I have." So she then goes home, tells my father that she wants to leave him. They're arguing. Now, we lived in a duplex, so we were on the top, and there was another family that lived below us.
Okay.
And the family below said they heard lots of arguing. You know, people have asked, like, how do people argue when they're deaf? Well, they still have a voice.
Yes.
They just don't necessarily say words that might sound like the word structure that we would use as hearing people,
right?
It's more a guttural arguing, and they do a lot of banging and stomping. That's how they get each other's attention.
Right.
So the downstairs neighbors were probably pretty annoyed by all the banging and stomping and yelling, that being deaf, they wouldn't realize how loud they were being.
Right.
So it was reported that the neighbors had said there was a lot of arguing and yelling. At 3 a.m. that night, my father came into my room and said, "Your mother left us for another man, and we have to go find her, or I'm going to go find her." And he said, "Get dressed." And he was taking us to the babysitter. So he then took us to the babysitter at 3 a.m.
Now, the babysitter was also deaf. Is that what you said?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
But had a hearing child.
Oh,
So we came to the babysitter, and she knew something wasn't right, because she was friends with my mother, knew that things weren't good. So when he said this, she thought, "That's weird, because I just saw her and she didn't say anything to me about any of this,"
right?
You know? And so she was very concerned, but didn't want to wake her child until morning. So, you know, in the morning, her hearing child called my grandfather and explained what was going on. And my grandfather lost it, you know, was like, "What is going on?" Like, he and my great grandfather ran over to the house and kicked open the door to the apartment, all while my father's working. Now, let me say that he dropped us off at 3 a.m, but he didn't go to work until his normal shift at like 7 a.m.
Right.
So what happened in between all of that time? You know, he claims that he was driving around looking for her. It was also a blizzard. I mean, the roads are being closed down in an area where they know how to deal with snow. So when there's a lot of snow and they shut things down, it's pretty bad.
It's
because
really
people know how to drive in the snow.
Yeah.
Right. It's really bad. And I actually have uncles that were working for the state snowplow system. And they said that, you know, they were snowplowing that night and it was awful. But somehow he manages to get to work on time. never says anything to anyone about what's going on, does his job, comes home and sees that the door is open and sees that people are there. I'm sure there were cars, you know, whatever the,
right.
the key was, the tip off, but he comes upstairs and is furious because people are in his apartment, blah, blah, blah. But what my grandparents, my great-grandfather and my grandfather discover a steam apartment. No dishes in the sink, nothing out of order, beds are made, everything is intact. And this is the time where, you know, cleaning is women's work. So it's not like he would be helping out typically to clean anything. But yet he took the time to make the beds that we were sleeping in, do all the dishes and have everything nice and clean before he left to find his missing wife. All very strange. So, and all of these things, circumstantial evidence, because you don't know where she is. So all of these things that I'm telling you that you're saying, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
All of them are circumstantial pieces of evidence because you don't know where she is.
Right.
So it might be a pretty important piece of information. Why would the house be clean? Why would the beds be made at 3 o'clock in the morning? Why my grandfather called the police. The police are in the apartment. They're all arguing. My brother and I are in the living room off to the side. And I remember I have very few memories, but I remember them all arguing and yelling and fighting. And I'm in the living room playing with my Bee Gees record player. I don't know why I remember that, but they decide to ask my father, they meaning the police, to empty his pockets. So he empties his pockets and pulls out $60. My grandfather goes nuts and is like, where did you get that money? I gave that to Lonnie. And he says, Lonnie gave it to me. You know, she didn't. She would have even told him she had that money. So that was 42 years ago. There's been searches. There's been foot searches. There's been helicopters at the time. The volunteer fire department did a bunch of things. And they have never found a single shred of evidence in any direction of her being missing, not missing. She's never in 42 years used her social security number. She's never sought medical attention. She's never tried to get a job. She's never tried to reach out to anyone. She literally vanished. And in 42 years, there's been very, very little that has been done. And honestly, I was just trying to survive. So I, you know, as a child, I really didn't do anything until now at 40 some, started doing things, because it wasn't until now that I felt safe enough to really do anything about
it. Well, considering again, who the main considering who the main suspect is, of course.
So, right.
Oh my goodness.
Right. So that's kind of a quick version of the story. And again, you know, that day the focus was my mother, not the children. And that day we stayed with him, even though, you know, nobody really knew what was going on. We were with him. For a short stint, my mother's sister, Glennie, Aunt Glennie, asked if she could take care of us, like right in that time. And she said, I'll bring them back to Toledo where she's from. And she said, I'll just hang on to them and keep them safe. And that only lasted a few days before he went up there and said, you're trying to steal my kids, and took us and basically promised that he would, that she would never see us again. And for my entire childhood, they were kind of blocked. They were not allowed to see us, not allowed to reach out. I was told as an adult, when I reconnected with them, that they sent money and cards and gifts, and I never saw any of that. Our life with him was very abusive, very neglectful. He would leave. Children's services would come in and take us away and then rehabilitate him and give us back. Sometimes we are in foster care. Sometimes we were with my aunt, my father's sister. I mean, we moved all the time, and that didn't change. And part of the reason why I wanted to write this book and say, you know, in stories like this, there's a glaring piece that nobody looks at. And that's what happened to the kids. And you'll never hear that in any article anywhere. What happened to her kids? So that was part of my motivation for writing the book. My brother's birthday is October 14th. And when I was 14, after doing this bouncing back and forth, foster care all over the place. So at 14, I was back in a school system where I had contact with a guidance counselor who knew my story and knew if I was back with him, it was not a good story. And at that point I was like, does it really matter? I was like, I'm fine. I'm fine. Just knowing that it didn't matter if I said it wasn't, because I had done that. And then I got beat because I told, and then, you know, the social workers would just leave and I'd be stuck with him angry. So I learned not to do that anymore.
Right.
And, she said, I'm going to give you my home phone number. She writes it down on a piece of paper and I'm thinking, well, this is interesting. Day or night, I don't care. You call me. And I thought, okay. I stick it in my pocket. That very night, it was my brother's birthday. My father had a pickup truck. We were driving about 20 minutes, 25 minutes into town to go out to dinner for my brother's birthday. My father's girlfriend came over and he had a pickup truck with an open cab, no cover. And he had my father, his girlfriend, and my brother in the cab. And he told me I had to sit in the back. Sometimes there's snow. Yep. And we drove against the wind 25 minutes into town. And I'm banging, crying on the back window, you know, tears freezing to my cheeks, banging that I'm cold, I'm cold, I'm cold. He drove into the Erie police station and gets out. Now, I was his interpreter as the hearing child my whole life. Like, it was odd that he would get out and not tell me to come and interpret for him. But right. I sat there like, I don't know what's going on. So I said, yeah. And he said, can you tell me what's going on here? He seemed very confused. Well, my father had told him that I was bad and that he was done with me and didn't want me anymore. Like he was dropping me off at a puppy pound or something. And the police, I then interpret this, my 14-year-old self interprets what my father said to me, to the police. And the police say, okay, can you tell him you can't do that? You can't just drop kids off here. Now it was a Friday night. And the police said, tell him he needs to take you home and we'll have children's services come out to help on Monday. So I tell my father this and he refuses still. And so the police say to me, well, do you have anybody we can call? And I said, I don't know. You could call my aunt, his sister, because we had many times been taken there. So right. He calls my aunt and like, I'm looking through the glass as he's on the phone. And my aunt says, tell them to figure it out. I'm done. Because we had been taken there so many times and she wouldn't take me in. So right. Now it was my brother's birthday. So this all did not involve him. It only involved me.
Wow.
So this is how the split happened between my brother and I. So out of nerves, the police officer comes back and says, is there anyone else that we could call? And I said, I don't know. And I, you know, just out of nerves, I put my hands in my pocket, you know, like, I don't know. And I felt that paper. And I said, here's my teacher's phone number. She gave it to me today and said, if I needed anything, I should call her day or night. I guess you could try her. Maybe yeah. She has an idea. So they call her and she says, I'm on my way. You know, I always say I was adopted. They got legal custody of me. And that's where I spent the remainder of my adolescence before going on to college. But none of that would have happened had I not had that amazing blessing. So I was able to move in with a stable family. And instead of telling me what I couldn't do, they told me what I could do. Yeah. You know, and you can do anything you want. Yeah, you're going to college. That was the worst but best day of my life because I don't know what, you know, would have happened to me. My brother did stay with him for two more years, but the abuse was great. And there were many times that he would run away and stay with friends.
Right.
And it was just off and on, off and on. Eventually he went to court and emancipated himself. And he never had the support that I had, you know, so it was right. Two very different roads, but that was where the split happened between the two of us.
How are your, and your relationship with your brother is, how is that now? Is it stable or is it still a little
wonky? He lives pretty far away from me. No, from time to time, I would say a few times a year, you know, yeah. We talk on Facebook. We're not real close. We just have very different lives and we're not near each other. And he's very, very busy, you know, with, you know, supporting his family and sure. I'm doing the same. So I would not say that we're close, but it's just because of the dynamics of our situation.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
Oh,
but he cares about me. I care about him, you know, but right. Yeah.
What do you do? I mean, what do you do at that age? It's out of your hands. It's out of your control. You're stuck with,
right.
You know, your parent and,
right.
Well, and that's the story of your mom. And her name is Lonnie. Yes. I know that they called yes. her Lonnie and your dad's name is Clinton, right? Legally, is it Clinton?
Correct.
And
legally it's Clinton. He never went by that though.
He always went by the name Bud.
Right.
Okay.
Yes.
So, and this is important because Again, got hooked up with Allison through Suzanne Timms and did a reading for her. And this is a good segue into my reading. And, you know, I'd love to get your, you know, what you thought about some of the stuff that I came up with. I didn't know anything about anything. And Allison's gave me a picture of her mother. And that's all I had. And I took it and I started getting information. And I did have a really hard time at first trying to, I remember like thinking, I was getting things in splotches and patches. And I'm going to tell you something else. The weird thing was when my daughter gave me the story, I was doing the same thing where it was, sometimes it just kind of flows naturally. And I start writing down like crazy. But in this case, I felt like I was getting everything in patches. And so this is kind of what I said. I'm reading it because I'm in my 50s and I can't remember shit. So, but I was just like, hey, Allison, I'm having a hard time with this. So I thought I'd share what I was getting so far, because I know that sometimes when I get validations that I'm on the right track, my brain just like all of a sudden opens up and then I'm like, and then it just like a flood of information. So I said, as soon as I tapped in, I saw this lady putting two kids into a car. I keep hearing the word routine. I'm not sure why she's showing me this because I keep asking her to show me what happened at the time of the crime. But I did see a little boy and a little girl, and I saw her putting them into a car. I said, but I also, like I told you, I'm a bit of a profiler. So I always feel the person, whether it's the perpetrator or victim. But I said, she's absolutely a lovely person, shy at times, but full of life. And I love, and she has a huge love for her kids. Like you guys were her life. And it was so obvious. And I just said, people just loved her. I kept hearing the words park and playground. I felt like she loved music and would sing to the radio loudly. Like I could hear her like a vocal tone. I couldn't hear what she was saying, which now makes sense to my head why I couldn't hear words, but I could hear that vocal tone. And I could just see her like tapping to, with her hands or like tap with like nodding with her head. I said, I was asking to see a spouse or a partner, but was having a hard time seeing him. I get the feeling of disconnect with this man. And then I asked you, was she separated or divorced? I feel like at the time of the crime that this was going on, there was like a separation or divorce going on. I feel like she may have known the perp, obviously. I'm getting feelings of jealousy, anger, and control. And it was mostly the control that stood out to me. And I did feel like she was grabbed from behind. I felt like there was something at her neck. I just assumed it was a weapon, but I felt like there was something right at her neck, but she was grabbed from behind. And the weird thing is I was behind them. Like I felt like I was looking forward and looking at what was happening. And that's all I saw was her getting grabbed by the neck or had a weapon held at her neck. And then I said, but it was really, I felt like it was dark. I kept seeing, it was, everything was dark. It was kind of darker in the house, darker outside, because I was like, I felt like I was looking outside at some point and it was dark out there as well. Excuse me. Let's see. And then this is where I was getting a little bit confused. And I said, but I'll sit with it again, but I just kept feeling it. Like every time I looked everywhere, it was dark. When I did look down, so then I felt like I was in your mom. So, and I didn't say that in here, but I felt like I was in your mom. Yeah. And when I looked down, I saw black gloves. So, I saw a sleeve with a black shirt. I saw gloves, and then I kept hearing Buddy Holly. And then I got a flash of Buddy Holly.
Right.
And I was like, what the heck? Why would I see Buddy Holly? Like it made no sense to me at the time. No, we know why. And I was getting images of a male, taller, a little bit of a thinner build, not that he was skinny, but just a thinner build. He's not a big burly guy. I didn't see him that way. I felt like he had longer hair on top, just maybe a slight wave to it. Let's see. And then I said, I feel like maybe he wore black glasses or black frame glasses. And I think the reason why I was pulling that is because I kept seeing Buddy Holly. So there, I knew that there was something that was similar to Buddy Holly that I, so I thought, well, maybe, does he look like him? Does he have the glasses like him? That, right. But I knew there was some kind of connection, not realizing that it was your dad's name, which freaked me the heck out. So,
right.
Honestly, I feel like she knows, she definitely knows the perps. I get feelings of being, it's familiar. He's very familiar to her. So, I did get pulled to a husband or a boyfriend or a husband type, for a perpetrator. Let's see. And I kept getting something about home. So now that makes sense. Hmm. That's where the crime happened, was at her home.
Right.
So, yes. And let's see. And then I just said, I hope you can take some of this. Some of this was clear as day and some of it was like very, it was in pieces. It felt strange. I'm not quite sure if I was hitting the right stuff. Can you tell me what makes sense and what doesn't make sense? Sit with this again. I'll sit with it again for clarity. And then I asked you to feel free to ask questions because I feel that when, once I do a reading and some things get validated, like I said, my brain kind of opens up. And then when you start asking questions, that starts helping me connect again. And I can start getting those answers. And that's what I did with Suzanne. So I knew it started to work really well. And then we didn't talk for a while. I mean, you're extremely busy. I also was really busy. Right. Suzanne reached and I reached out to each other and I was like, am I close? Am I, cause I was dying, like not knowing that answer. Right. So I was like, was I close? Was I totally wrong?
Right.
And so she did tell me that there were, that you were in Pennsylvania. So some of the crime stuff that her and I had talked about, I think I said to her a session too, crime location. And I think I told you, oh, by the way, I talked to Suzanne and she verified some of the things that I got. So then I was able to sit down again and open myself up to session two. My focus was the crime and location of, where she is, not of what happened, but where she's located at that moment of when I was connecting. And I said, I tapped in this morning and I immediately saw a wide open field that had tall trees around the border. I get the feeling that I'm not too far from home. And this could be where the park came in. I felt like I just kept getting pulled to a park. And that could just be like a regular park or a state park, something like that. And let's see. And I was saying, I don't really feel that she was completely buried. I feel more like I was dropped off type of thing, you know? So the burial was like, maybe to hide a little bit, but not completely buried. Mm-hmm. Let's see where I lost myself here. I felt like I jumped into a scene where the victim was, and I felt like I was standing on an embankment or like a bit of an incline, and there was dry leaves under my feet. I could see tall trees all the way around me. And then I do what we call map work, which is I just try to do like 12 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 6 o'clock, and 9 o'clock. So I can get an idea of what's around me, and hope in the hopes that someone that's familiar with the area can be like, oh, I totally recognize this. So when I sit with my map, I am standing next to the victim. So she's in the center of this map. And then I work in a circle. And sometimes that's hard to describe when I'm trying to do these things. I did feel like there was a road, a busier road. There was an open field to my 3 o'clock. To my 6 o'clock, I felt there was a sharp incline that goes down into water. It feels way, way down, though. It's almost like I had a bird's eye view of the water when I looked down. And I saw rocks and mountains, or like rocky mountains. And not a whole lot of dirt on those mountains, if I can remember correctly. It more looked like stacked rocks that form mountains. I'm sure there's dirt underneath it, but you can't really see the dirt. It was like these types of mountains. And that was the water. And then beyond the water was those mountains. So that's still at my 6 o'clock. Let's see, what else did I get? And I felt like the water ran from left to right, which for people that are looking for something, that does help because it gives you an idea of direction and where things could be. Like if you were on the other side, if it went to right, you know, so that kind of stuff. I always try to look at that.
Right.
I felt like I was in an area that's a popular spot. I felt like a lot of people go hiking here. I felt like hiking, there's all kinds of stuff, not just hiking, like rock climbing possibly. And I think this is where that park came in. I still feel like there's some sort of maybe state park or park where it's a popular spot. Doesn't mean that it's easy to spot a body. I've been on searches before and it is so, so difficult when you don't have something to go on. You know, if you have an idea of like, oh, here in this area, then you start doing this zigzag cross search.
Right.
But if you don't know for sure, it's so hard to figure it out. But, you know, you could be a couple of feet away from a body. Well, you probably, unfortunately, smell it first, but it's still hard to see if it's under brush, if it's not something. I've gone through searches where there was water in front of me and I thought I could walk along the water bank, but there's all these sticks and brush. Like you can't get through it unless you have some kind of machete to like get through that. And even then, and it was winter and I could still see down, like see through the brush if I'm on a search. So people just assume like it was searched. She's not there. It doesn't mean that they're not there. It just means you didn't find them, you know? So I always tell people cadaver dogs are usually your best bet because they can pick up scent after 100 years, you know, they can pick up scents all from a way, way, way back. The other thing I was telling Suzanne was sometimes dogs will alert to the trees or to the treetops and it's because a body has been there, but now it's been absorbed into the earth and into the trees.
Right.
And
I can't wait till you read my book.
is this what happened?
All of this is in there. Yes.
Wow. Oh, I just got total chills.
And you just said about the dogs going up.
Yes.
They we did a cadaver dog search. That's what happened. And I said, are they barking at squirrels or, and that's what they said. No, the scent goes up.
Yep. It grows throughout the tree.
We didn't find her that. We didn't find her there though.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's hard because then there's animals, right? And animals grab things and throw things around and drag it and
it's 40 years.
And 40 years. Right. Ah, it's so frustrating. So anyways, this is what I saw. And at my 9 o'clock, I saw trees. I asked to see 3 to 5 miles out. So this is something I can do. I can like give myself a pinpoint. So at my 3 o'clock, I was like, okay, all I saw was trees. So I want to see beyond those trees. What do I see? I asked for like a specific landmark. What's the most recognizable landmark? And I asked to be pushed out 3 to 5 miles to see if I can find a recognizable landmark. And I saw a very small downtown area. Like when I say downtown, I'm not talking like Pittsburgh downtown. I'm talking about a small town downtown. So kind of quaint, very cute. And I did see a downtown mm-hmm. area. I saw shops and I saw cars parked on the side of the road or on the street. I don't think the downtown area is very long. I feel like it's just like, you know, maybe not even a mile of length. It's very short, but I felt like,
yeah,
you know, there it is. Okay. And then I saw a very tall, narrow white church with cement steps in the front of it. I feel like there's a bell at the top. I feel like these buildings were old, possibly built in the 1800s. I felt like this is a very old downtown area or very old church somewhere, something like that. Let's see. Okay. And then you started kind of commenting. Do you remember what you were telling me about some of these impressions that I was getting?
Yes. I'm sure that when you watch this, you'll see my face because I felt the same thing. As I said about the dogs, I wrote about that, in my book about all that happening. Wow. What you just said about the field. So the duplex to the right of where we lived is just like a big open field.
Right.
And at the back of the field are just tall trees. It's like, it's almost like a line, like a fence line yeah. of trees, like it's field and then trees. Directly next door to that field is a big white church that has been there for, I don't even know how long. It's very goodness. Old with a bell at the top. It's like the classic looking country yes. church, that's big exactly white, you know? And the whole opening in the front with the brick steps, that is directly next door. That's the church they were married in. I was baptized in. It's directly next door to where we lived. So it was our house, a field, and the church.
That's crazy. Because I feel if you are in that direction. Uh-huh.
And the beyond those trees,
uh-huh.
beyond those trees is a creek, which I think, I might be wrong, but I think that creek is part of French Creek, which is a very big recreational area where people kayak and fish. And I don't know that there's a place to rock climb, but I don't know that there isn't. I'm not aware of it if there is.
Now that you said
and
that.
And you said that you saw mountains. Okay. So you said something about mountains and where we were, like basically at the bottom of, I don't know that it's called a mountain, but it's like a huge incline. It's like a big hill. Okay. It almost looks like a mountain. Okay. It's a super dense, you know, rural area, yeah. like dense forestry. And, but right at the foot of that hill or mountain is where we lived. And literally there's an intersection and then it goes up. So that makes total sense yeah. that going up that hill is right next to where we lived.
Wow. That's crazy. Because I remember, like, I feel like if that is 3 to 5 miles out, you're going to go in that direction, 3 to 5 miles to where she is. I know she did not go far. I feel like she's right around that area. And especially if that night there was a huge snowstorm.
Now I will say on the other side, so huge, right? So on the other side, so once on the left side is that big hill, but, okay. and then there's our house and then there's the church and then there's a bunch of little homes and stuff there, fire department on the other side. But if you keep going, not even a mile down the road, there's nothing. It's like swampy area. It might even be protected land and it's just swampy. Like, I don't even know that it's used for anything. It's just there. Yeah.
Can I ask you in that area, is there a train track by any chance?
I'm not sure how close, but I'm sure at that time, there were a lot of train tracks through all that area. I'm okay. not sure how much it's used now, but yes, I'm sure there are.
Okay. So the second reading that I did with my daughter, I kept hearing, I'm closer to the tracks. I'm closer to the tracks. And I felt like I still felt the trees and I still saw the water and I could still do all this stuff. Huh. But there is a set of train tracks that I kept seeing and I kept hearing, and this is before I knew this was your mother. I'm closer to the tracks. That whole reading, let me just tell you, was very bizarre, and I'll read it to you also, but that's one thing that really struck out to me, because I don't think I got tracks on our first reading. And the fact that she would say I'm closer to the tracks versus like showing me tracks or showing me something, that's normally how
right.
I get it.
Right.
So this whole time, I know she knows that it's me. I know that she knows, and she's telling me stuff like I told you, she was like, hey, Olivia, don't forget about me. And you know, my daughter, like this, it's just so funny because some of the things that I got here kind of, now that I know, kind of blew my mind with the second reading. Right. So you did tell me, all that stuff. I think I looked at the case again. And I said, there, the weapons could absolutely be hands, because I really couldn't see what was in front of her, but I felt like she was being dragged down a hallway and fighting ensued mm-hmm. in the living room. And I did say, oh gosh, I'm like, I felt like she was dragged backwards. And I felt like there possibly could be evidence of a struggle. Like I felt like there could have been things that were knocked over. That's how much of a struggle I felt mm-hmm. there was. And I saw his arm going up and down. So that usually tells me one of two things, that it's either a stabbing or a beating. Because I could feel his movement. I just couldn't feel or see a weapon. Sometimes my brain does that to me to protect wow. me. And then I yeah. said, I feel strongly at that some point he told her that he was going to kill the kids. I think that this is what he was threatening her with, to get her to shut up, to stop struggling, to, you know, that kind of stuff. If she didn't stop making noises, he was going to kill the kids. And she felt like he would absolutely kill the kids. And I feel like this is when she made up her mind to save you. This is where I felt that she was like, because she is a fighter. She is absolutely a fighter mm-hmm. and she would do anything, but she would also do anything to protect you guys. And I felt at this point is when she made that decision of fine, do what you need to do to me, because she knew he would have killed you guys. I really feel like he would have also. I started then going into what I was feeling from the perpetrator at the time. I felt like he was very disconnected to everything. Emotions, but he's all about anger. He's very quick to anger, is how I felt. And the control, having to have that control about everything. I just say that
what fires me right now is that we're talking about a person who has walked freely since this happened.
Yes.
Everything you're saying is spot on. And he has been a free man all of this time.
The hard part is evidence. You can't yep. prosecute somebody on hearsay. You have to right. have the evidence that backs it up. And that is what makes it so, so difficult. And that's a really hard job.
And the tricky part is there is evidence, but it's all circumstantial if you don't find the final yeah. piece.
Yes. Yeah. 100%. That's insane. It makes me feel so badly for the family, because it makes me feel bad for the police, because I know how hard some of these guys live and breathe these cases, and they can't let them go. It sticks with them and they live with it just as much as a family would at times, you know. And I've met police that are like that.
Yeah.
They take it home with them, and they're just like, it never stops eating at them, you know?
You're married to one.
yeah, exactly. And so, you know, and the other thing I think I was so shocked about, it is very rare that I get names, So the fact that she gave me the name of the perpetrator to me was unbelievable, that she used whatever. And this is why I'm telling you, like, spirit is brilliant. They will get their information across any possible way. And so I would never have thought of the word buddy or for a name, right?
Right.
It's not in my Rolodex, but I am a huge Buddy Holly fan. Like, I love, when I was a kid in my teens, I loved Buddy Holly. Huh. And the fact that she used that as a connection for me was like,
wow,
a holy crap moment. And I'm telling you, spirit right. is genius. They will do whatever they can to get the word out. But she actually names her perpetrator. And I do believe it's your dad. I mean, I feel it like way down into chills. My gut. Let's see, what else did I get? I think, gosh. Oh, you know, I did feel that obviously he took her out of, and now that you told me about the neighbors, it makes sense to me. I did feel that he took her out of the house. And I do you remember me saying, was there a witness? I kept feeling there was some type of witnesses, and I felt like it was a neighbor. And I think I asked you about that. And you're like, no, I don't think there was any witnesses. But now you're telling me that story. I think this is what
that I know of.
Right. Well, I think that it's the downstairs neighbors that you just told me about. They heard the fighting. Right. They yes. heard everything.
They did.
And I knew it was a neighbor. They knew something, you know, but it's like they didn't have all the information. Right. And I think that's what I was picking up on. Like, there were mm-hmm. some people who knew of something about your mom to prove that it wasn't her just leaving. And so and right. even the cops, they know that she didn't just leave. Your family knows that she just didn't leave. You right. know, she just didn't leave.
No.
She loved you guys too much to do that. But she also, I feel like she sacrificed herself right. so that you two would be safe. And that's, I truly feel that. And so that was that first reading with you. And I kind of, if you don't mind, I want to talk about the second reading, because again, I just said, I always name my readings.
Sure.
And I said blonde girl, because I didn't know who she was. and I was like, murdered. Immediately came to mind that she was murdered. And I said, I felt like this girl was very shy, kind of naive about life in general. Had highs and lows in her life, trying to make love work is what I said. Check this out. Mm-hmm. Now I understand why I got this. But when I was reading it and my daughter was telling me the story, I'm like, why did I get this? P. I hear the letter P. I hear the name Patty. And I did. Yes. Are you getting it? Patty's
Suzanne's mom.
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
And I was like, there's a P connection.
They're probably up there together.
They are. I mean, for sure. I think they're the ones that brought you and Suzanne together.
Yeah.
Totally.
Well, and the interesting thing is Suzanne somehow found my justice page. She got my book, and how I kind of connected with her is I offered a online book club where we would meet to talk about like sections of the book to the completion. And she joined that group.
Oh, cool.
So I didn't really know who she was until then. So we kind of talked all the way through and I was like, oh my gosh.
Yes. I don't think things like that are accidental. There's no, it's not a coincidence. It's serendipity, like for sure. But I heard P, I sound like Patty. There's a P connection to this. For some reason, I'm getting a P connection to this situation. How freaking crazy is that? So they're just like, wow. No, Olivia, get on this. and then I did say, it felt like she was being held hostage. She was a little bit, right? He wouldn't leave her
for
alone.
A little while.
Yep. And that she was strangled.
Well, probably the whole relationship because he refused to leave.
Yeah, exactly what I was thinking too. And I did pick up that she was beaten and strangled. Let's see. Oh, and then I was trying to describe the perpetrator. And I said, I see him, a little bit more athletically built And I kept seeing Yosemite Sam, which, why am I getting all these weird things with your dad? I said, okay, I'm seeing Yosemite Sam, but not the beard and not the color red, but the shape of the mustache is like,
I was just going to say he had that dumb mustache thing.
And then I said, was he in his 30s or 40s ? At the time of the crime. Here's something weird again. Glasses ? Black rimmed. I got it again. Did he wear black rimmed glasses that you know of?
I'm not sure.
I got it again. That's really strange for me to get it again. But I felt like glasses ? Black rimmed ? And then I said,
I don't remember him wearing glasses.
But... And I said brown hair. Now let me ask you something else. Was he a mechanic?
Definitely brown hair.
Okay. Was he a mechanic by any chance? Or fixed things?
So not by trade, but yes, he fixed things all the time. He did his own car repairs and all of that.
I kept getting cars, fixing cars, stuff like that. Because I was trying to pick up traits, like how would people know him and be able to verify him? Train tracks. This is where the train tracks keep coming in. I'm closer to the tracks. Books. But I just started seeing books. I think that's you. I just kept seeing books. I'm like, I don't know why I'm getting books. This is really weird. Am I in school? I mean, is she taking classes? Now it makes sense to me because that was my left brain thinking books and school.
My book.
But I did, yes. So I started getting books. I felt like I was taking back roads. I felt like when I was in the car, I mean, I feel already deceased at this point, but when I was in the car with her, I felt we're taking back roads and I'm closer to the tracks. And I kept hearing that over and over. And then I kept feeling like there was a sibling and I leaned towards a male. And I felt like there was an M connection. And it was really weird. But I got the letter M. And then I started feeling.
Her sibling or his sibling?
Your sibling. I felt like there was.
Oh, my sibling.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. I felt like there was a sibling. Male is, I think, what I was coming up
with. I have a brother.
Yeah. And I kept seeing I kept seeing little kids. But then this is what I said. I said, I do feel like this girl, is a mother figure and she's also with a mother figure as if her mother had passed. Did her mother pass?
Yes.
So yeah. I felt like they were together. Did you say her name was Maxine?
I did. Yes.
There's the M connection.
There's the M. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. That's good. I just got total chills.
Wow. Yeah. Oh, me too.
Yeah. So they're together.
Wow.
And she's, this is what I said. I see them together holding hands. I do see an older male in the background. He's not coming forward, but they are all at peace. Because she's with her
parents. That could be her father, my grandfather. Yeah.
She's with her parents again. And I put parents in quotations because I didn't know who this other male was. But I feel like she's with her parents again. And that she is at total peace. She's at total peace. And I just thought that was such a crazy thing for me to pick up on, but I knew at that point it was coming in mediumistically and that she was there. She was showing me these things. And then the M connection and her mother's name.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And I said, she's with a mother figure on the other side. And I was just like,
well, here's another M connection. So my grandmother, Maxine, is Maxine Maria. And my middle name is Maria. And my daughter's middle name is, I named daughter. Her first name is Maria. Wow. So there's another M that has carried. And my youngest daughter, her middle name is Maxine.
Oh my gosh.
All those M's.
So M connection matters. It's just their way of acknowledging it. And I think that little piece of information is just letting you know that she's at peace, you know, because I think that sometimes or someone may have it running through their head, like, you know, is she at peace or is she upset or is she scared? Is she, you know, because these were all scary, traumatic things that happened to her. She's fine. She's at peace. And she wants you guys to be it too. That's like what I started pulling at the very, very end. And then I said, she may have children, and I'm pulled to the brother. So I just feel like this is also important for your brother to know. So I don't know if he's open to any of that, but she's acknowledging him in a big, big way. He might be the one that is constantly fighting this stuff in his head. I don't know for sure, but this is what it feels like to me. So the fact that she's acknowledging him and letting him know that she's in total peace, and she looks over everybody. So she's always with everybody. So that is it.
And a lot of people have asked about him, and we're very different in that, like, I'm the big mouth and, you know, I have been very active and vocal and yes, he's very quiet, very reserved. He internalized, like, we're like opposite
there. He's a lot like your mother. Because I think she was also like that too. Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
I love hearing that. Yeah. Thank you for that.
You are so welcome. Hey, it is about that time. We need to start wrapping up. Thank you so much for coming on.
This has been amazing. Thank you so much.
You bet. I appreciate your time. I will have all of Allison's information in the notes below where you can get her books. You have to read it. I already started reading her one book, and I want to check out the child's book. I think that's such a important book to have for your kids, especially if they've gone through something. Maybe grandma or grandpa passed away. Mm-hmm. It doesn't even have to be something so tragic, but having to learn, you know, resilience is, it's something learned too. You know, you have to learn it and model it.
For sure.
So I think that's such a freaking awesome book, Allison. Thank you. Thank you for writing that.
Thank you.
It's great.
Thank you for all of your help and attention and getting the word out. I feel like that's where the answer lies right now.
Yeah.
Trying to get as many, you know, voices and thoughts and resources and ideas, you know, to keep pushing forward.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, guys, with that all being said, we're wrapping up Allison, her mother's story, Lonnie, such a beautiful, beautiful young lady taken way too soon. But I will have all of Allison's information in the notes below. And with that, we will say goodbye and I will talk to you guys next week. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Mystical and Mysteries, the podcast. If you liked what you heard, please remember to hit like and subscribe. Have a question for Olivia or have a missing person that needs to be highlighted? Feel free to get in touch. You can reach her at theclaireconnection.com. Until next time, stay safe.